Okay, welcome everyone. It is Tuesday night in Alachua. It is Wednesday morning in India. I think it's Wednesday morning in Australia. It's early in the morning in Europe. And 8 p.m. here in the East Coast. And we want to welcome you all. Tonight we're going to be talking about a very interesting subject. It's about taste. And let me just begin recording this. I want to welcome everyone who is present. I want to welcome everyone who I may have named and everyone who I may not have named. So please excuse me if I didn't name you. Hold on a second. And so tonight we're discussing an interesting subject. The title is Taste. And it's an interesting subject because, you know, taste, we talk about getting a taste for chanting the holy name. We talk about getting a taste for hearing, getting a taste for serving. And it sounds a little bit like it could be sense gratification, or there could be material motivation to get a taste. In the early days of the movement, and probably still today, but especially then, people were experimenting with drugs, and so they would chant to get high. That was their prime motivation. I'm sure many people today chant to relieve stress or chant to feel good. And so we can be confused when we talk about taste, thinking, well, if I'm chanting to get some taste, wouldn't that be material? So we have to define taste. We have to understand what taste means. Hold on a second. We have to wait a second here. We want to understand what taste means. You know, what's the definition of taste? And obviously, because the scriptures talk about taste, can't be material. But it sometimes can be a little difficult to distinguish the difference between material taste and spiritual taste, because we're very, we're very attached, or we're very inclined to tasting material pleasures. So it can be difficult to distinguish. It's something like when we look at Krishna's pastimes, and then, we look at Krishna's pastimes, and then, we see Krishna enjoying, especially with the gopis, and it looks so much to us like ordinary material activity. And it can be extremely difficult, especially in the neophyte stage, to understand how that exchange can have nothing to do with the affairs, material affairs between men and women in this world, because it looks exactly like it. But of course, as you advance in Krishna consciousness, then you begin to understand it has nothing to do with affairs of this world. It has a transcendental nature to it all of its own. But it requires some purification to understand that, and it requires advancement to understand that. And it requires, we could say, an experience of transcendental bliss, transcendental pleasure, to be able to understand that. So in a similar way, it requires some experience of transcendental pleasure in Krishna consciousness to understand the difference between taste, material taste, and spiritual taste, and how we deal with the taste Krishna gives us in Krishna consciousness, and not become, how should we say, bewildered perhaps? Bewildered by that taste, or not be materially motivated to taste, but be purely motivated. At the same time, want a taste. What does it mean to want a taste? Because devotees pray to get a taste. So it can be confusing, right? You know, well, the devotee's praying to get a taste, and we say, well, I thought we shouldn't desire that. We should just desire to serve Krishna. So how does Prabhupada speak about taste? And how does the Shastra speak about taste? So we're going to explore that and understand what taste is. The actual word for taste is rasa in Sanskrit. And rasa sometimes means juice. Sometimes it means relationship, or Srila Bhaktisiddhanta described it with the word mellow. A mellow or a taste you get from a relationship. And Prabhupada also explained that taste comes as our senses become purified. So if a devotee is praying for taste, in one sense you could say he's praying for his senses to be purified so he can experience his relationship with Krishna. Because we've all broken our relationship with Krishna. We all want to reestablish our relationship. So it's not wrong to pray, is it? It's not wrong to pray for that relationship, to pray to want that relationship. It would be wrong to pray to enjoy that relationship, because we know within that relationship our position is to serve. And then, of course, we go back to this idea of taste. Well, if I'm tasting something, how am I serving it? Well, part of the problem is our experience or our definitions of taste, when they're material, don't involve service. Just like you taste ice cream. It doesn't involve service to ice cream. I don't know. Maybe some of you serve ice cream. I haven't seen anybody do it. But when we use the word love in our vocabulary, most of the time, it doesn't involve service. It involves experiencing pleasure from something or somebody. And we just use the word love. In Sanskrit, we wouldn't use the word love. We would use the word kama. Not prema, because kama better defines what we tend to refer to in the West as love. Oh, I love that movie. Are you going to serve the movie? I love that book. Are you going to serve the book? Maybe if it's the Bhagavatam, you can serve it. But in general, oh, I love so-and-so. Are you going to serve them? Maybe you will, but often you won't. So Prabhupada defined bhakti not just as love, but love with service. So when we talk about love or we talk about taste, it's very much from the position of ourselves being the enjoyer. And we're enjoying the taste, the ice cream, the food, the whatever it is we're enjoying. We're not serving anything. So that's a big distinction, that taste in Krishna consciousness means we're always in the servant mood. We're never in the enjoyer mood, whereas material taste is always the enjoying mood. So how does a devotee deal with the experience of taste in Krishna consciousness? Well, it doesn't make him become a sense enjoyer, a sense gratifier. It doesn't make him think that he's God. He's not motivated to just enjoy Krishna. Oh, I don't want to serve Krishna, I just want to enjoy him. I mean, some people do think like that, but the devotee does not think that way. Other people think, let me enjoy God. Why serve him? Let him serve me. So that's not what we're referring to as taste. Taste is relationship. It's the pleasure the devotee gets from his relationship or her relationship with Krishna in service, or the pleasure one gets from executing devotional service, either the practice of devotional service, sadhana bhakti, or in higher stages of devotional service. The pleasure that any of us have gotten by chanting, through kirtan, through any of the practices of Krishna consciousness, that's considered taste. Now, is taste important? Do we need it? If so, how do we get it without desiring it or making it a motive, at least from the material perspective, that I want to be happy, I want to enjoy? Well, it's interesting because, I mean, fundamentally, we'll just start in the beginning. If somebody's not happy in Krishna consciousness, do you think they're going to stay? Well, some people are more determined, some people are more intelligent, and they can continue in their bhakti, even if they're not getting much taste. But ultimately, that's not possible, because taste is a motivating factor. So Prabhupada explains that in the Nectar of Devotion. He says, what drives people? He said, what drives them is the taste. So he said, similarly, in Krishna consciousness, what drives the devotees is taste, is the experience of Krishna. So there's a nice story. One of my godbrothers told me this story. He was also questioning this whole phenomena. You know, is it right to ask Krishna to give us a taste? Wouldn't that be wrong? He was questioning it in relation to this, the prayer, Jagannath Swami Nayanapatagami Bhavatumi. That prayer, the devotee's praying, Krishna, Jagannath, please be visible to me. So we were instructed, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta instructed us, don't try to see God, but act in a way that God will see you. So the devotee was questioning, well, maybe it's wrong to pray to Krishna, please be visible. But part of what it means, please be visible, is reveal your nature to me, reveal your sweetness to me. Excuse me, I'm having problems with this software. It keeps dropping out. Drop out means you're recording, and then it decides to stop. Isn't that fun? I keep looking at, why is it stopping? I have a new computer. It shouldn't stop, but it is. So, frustration, anxiety. I'm actually recording it on another recorder just because I knew this might happen. Anyway. So, let's go back to where we were. So, Jagannatha Swami Nayanapathagami Bhavatumi. So, Vodhi was confused. So he asked Prabhupada, is this okay? And Prabhupada said something interesting. He said, unless Krishna reveals himself to you, how can you go on in Krishna consciousness? Interesting, isn't it? In other words, unless there's some experience of Krishna, where will the faith be? Unless there's some experience of Krishna, where will the motivation come? Because we'll eventually be motivated to get taste somewhere from something. And if there's no taste coming from Krishna, then we'll tend to look for it elsewhere. So in the neophyte stage of Krishna consciousness, if a devotee is praying for taste, what's his motive? Well, his motive is Krishna. If I have taste, then I'll be steady in your service. I'll be inspired. I need something. Please reveal that you're there. Please give me a message, a warning. No, not a warning, a sign that you're there. Let me know that you're there. Let me experience you, what it's like to be a servant of you. Something, some indication that I'm on the right path, that I can do this. So you can see that a devotee could pray for taste, but his motive is to bring him closer to Krishna, to inspire him in his service. It's different than just wanting to taste for the sake of tasting, just for the sake of enjoying. I'm miserable, I want to be happy, so I want God to make me happy. That's okay. That's a very, very immature stage. It's better than nothing, because the better you get something from God, some kind of happiness from God, that's better than you get it from something else, from something sinful. But it's not the highest stage. So the idea is that whenever a devotee is praying to Krishna, what is the devotee praying for? What's his object? What's his goal? His goal is to become pure, become a pure devotee, become a pure servant. So that means if he's praying for taste, it must be in relationship. It must be motivated by the desire to be pure, to come closer to Krishna, to be a better servant. And you can see it's true in Krishna consciousness that if we have a taste, for example, for chanting the holy name, it's very inspiring and it's very purifying. And obviously, if we have a taste, we'll chant more. And if we chant more, we become more purified. If we don't have a taste, it's more difficult to chant, and we may end up chanting less, or we may end up being more distracted. So one of the things that we see, or the same thing with hearing, hearing shastra, hearing class, if there's a taste, you want to hear it more. And so when we're praying for a taste, inherent within that prayer is I don't want the taste for material things. It's like one time Prabhupada said, he was defining the meaning of the holy name, and he said, Krishna, please engage me in your service. I'm embarrassed by this material service. So I don't, and he went on to say, I don't want to be engaged in material service. So Krishna, it's the same thing. Krishna, please give me a taste. I don't want this material taste. So what is the material taste? Material taste is a huge problem for us. We're attracted. We tend to be attracted to mundane things like news, like novels, movies, music that's not Krishna conscious, discussions that are not Krishna conscious, visuals that are not Krishna conscious. Why? Because we get some kind of taste, so-called pleasure, from those things. And the pleasure we're getting from Krishna consciousness is not strong enough to overcome the desire to want to taste those things. So when a devotee is praying to Krishna, please give me taste, what he's thinking is, give me a taste that's so strong that I lose my taste for everything else. And that way, I can be more purely engaged in your service, and I can always be engaged in some way in hearing about you, speaking about you, and so forth. So that, you see, you understand that that taste is important for a devotee, because the devotee knows that this is what inspires him. Now, it's so important, another way it's important, we learn from Bhagavad Gita. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that, you know, the verse, Raso Varjam Raso Piyasya, you can't give up a lower taste without a higher taste. So in the purport there, Prabhupada elaborates on this principle of how important taste is in Krishna consciousness. And he's making basically the same points I'm making, that unless we have this higher taste, we can't give it up. Give up lower taste. So it's really like a secret in bhakti, and it's important. And it's important in the sense that it's important in the sense that it's a barometer. And how is it a barometer of our bhakti? Well, we understand that the more we're advancing in Krishna consciousness, not even considering levels of advancement, like someone may be higher, someone may be lower, but just that we're advancing, that we're becoming purified. The more we're becoming purified, then gradually the more there'll be a taste. That's how it works. Why? Well, Prabhupada explains that. In the example of chanting the holy names, if we're not tasting the holy names, Prabhupada says, our senses cannot taste the holy name unless they're pure. Have you ever chanted and not tasted the holy name? Have you ever chanted and actually been bored? You really didn't feel that Krishna was there? That is a symptom of material senses, which is why, generally, when a new person comes to Krishna consciousness, it's difficult for them to chant for a long time, unless it's a very ecstatic kirtan. But if you give them japa beads, you say, sit down and chant japa, for 2 hours. I mean, most people can't do that. They'll get distracted. It'll be extremely difficult, because the senses aren't yet purified. So when they're chanting Hare Krishna, what's actually happening is they're not really They're not really chanting Hare Krishna. They're not really tasting Krishna. The Krishna's, they're not, I mean, Krishna's there, but they're not able to taste Krishna. And so the understanding is that as the senses become purified, then the spiritual taste can be appreciated. It can only be appreciated by spiritual senses. And so similarly, the attraction to hearing Bhagavatam, like there's this joke, you know, they say, is Leela with us? Palak Paneer is here, and his better half, Leela, is somewhere. Maybe, I hope they're together. So there's this joke, you know, the cure for insomnia is to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because when you don't have a taste, then Srimad Bhagavatam, for most people, would be boring. And they'd fall asleep, as often happens when you get bored. And sometimes we know when we chant, some devotees, maybe you have experienced, fall asleep, you get bored. So the senses are not yet purified or purified enough. So we're not experiencing the transcendental sweetness of the vibration. And only the material aspect of the vibration, so there's no relish. Same thing with the eyes. We may see Krishna and not be so attracted. We'd rather see other things. Other things may be more attractive. Many devotees are very attracted to movies. So that's, movies are of course auditory, but it's also, obviously, it's visual. So we want to see these, some exciting thing, you know, cars falling off cliffs and whatever else you see in movies. Superhuman activities being performed and weird animals and monsters. You know. So in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says, if one has a taste for the Bhagavatam, he won't be attracted to any other literature. So similarly, you can say any kind of devotional service. If one has a taste for chanting, then one is not going to be attracted to singing some mundane song. It's just not going to give him anything. There won't be any motive to do it. In the same way, you know, you can take each sense. So you see the value of taste, and it's so important that we can, and it's so indicative of our advancement, that we can monitor our progress in Krishna consciousness by the taste we're getting. So if we're not getting much taste, if we're not motivated, or we're more motivated materially, then we know there's some repair work we have to do. As I said before, Prabhupada said, he was asked, what is Maya? He said, Maya means that material things are more attractive than Krishna. So it's a perfect example, isn't it, of what we're talking about. That material things appear more attractive than Krishna. Of course, we know they're not, but because the senses are not pure, they appear to be. And some material things are very attractive, because our senses are impure. We should understand that. That's why they're attractive. They're not attractive to pure devotees. There's a funny story. One time, maybe, I don't know if it was the first time Prabhupada went to Hawaii, but they wanted to take Prabhupada to see, so to go sightseeing somewhere, see a certain kind of trees. And Prabhupada said something, you know, I've not come here to sightsee. You know, he was indicating that, you know, I mean, he didn't say this, but he's a pure devotee. He can see Krishna. So, you know, how anxious is he to see some rare tree that perhaps he's never seen before? Obviously, it's not a big thing for him, as you could imagine. If he closes his eyes, Prabhupada closes his eyes and sees the Leela of Radha and Krishna, seeing some tree in Hawaii is not a big thing. So, you know, there's this correlation between the senses becoming purified, the taste, therefore, for hearing and chanting and serving and seeing Krishna, and detachment from material taste. They work together. So it is important that we have a taste. And if we're not getting the taste, then we have to go back. So, okay, where am I going wrong? What am I doing wrong that I'm not getting this taste? Because we should always take this, that if the taste isn't there, it's indicative that I'm doing something wrong. I'm neglectful in some way. Maybe I'm minimizing certain activities. Maybe I'm not focused in my devotional activities. Maybe I'm too involved in material activities when I don't need to be. Something is there. And it's Krishna's telling us, look at, you know, you're going somewhere, you're in a doctor's office, you're on an airplane, and you're more, and you bring a Krishna conscious book, and the whole time you read the magazine. Don't even read the book. And you might think, well, no big deal. Maybe it isn't, but maybe it is. Maybe it's an indication that something's lacking in your Krishna consciousness, that you had an opportunity to hear about Krishna, and you didn't. And we were having a japa workshop this past weekend, and we're talking about the things that get in the way, that hinder our japa. And, you know, one devotee brought up television. He said he got rid of his cable, but he sometimes watches movies. So I said, you know, not Krishna conscious movies. I said, you know, if the time you spent watching movies, let's say it's a couple hours, even just a couple hours a week, one movie a week, a couple hours a week reading Bhagavatam, okay, that's 100 hours a year. And I think you can read a whole volume in about 10 hours. So that could mean, I mean, I may be wrong, but let's say, use this for an example. He could have read 10 volumes, and maybe 7 cantos of the Bhagavatam could have been read if he didn't watch the movies. And probably if he did that, he would be developing quite a taste for hearing. It's called Kathamrita, the nectar of Krishna Katha. So, you know, Prabhupada, he wanted and he expected that we would become attracted to hearing and chanting, because these are the daily activities that he established in his temples, right? So obviously, if you're living in a Hare Krishna temple and you don't like to chant, you don't like to hear, and you don't like deity worship, you're in trouble, because it's going to be a torturous situation for you, isn't it? So, okay, we have some discussion here. So Pallavi says, Avikam says, you mean impress Krishna? I forget the context in which I was saying, I don't know if you're referring to me, impress Krishna, I don't know what I said. Please Krishna, not impress. Maybe that's the misunderstanding. So Pallavi says, is it all right to ask Krishna for an easier job so that one can get more time for Krishna? Would that desire be for taste of the holy name, or is it material, as one is asking for a material thing or success? I think it's okay. It all depends on your motive. Well, let's say you got an easier job and then you just slept more. So if you know that if you had an easier job, you could use it for serving Krishna, you could pray for that. But what you could also pray for is the intelligence of how to perhaps find an easier job or create an easier job or in some way within the job you have, find the time. You know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't leave it entirely to Krishna. I would also pray to him, Krishna, please give me the intelligence to find a way to support myself in which I'll have more time to chant. That's fine. That's good. I pray like that all the time. Another thing you can do, which is perhaps more positive approach, is pray, Krishna, I want to be engaged in your service as much as possible. Please engage. So you're going positively, and then you're not thinking about your job, but the connotation is there that if you want to be always engaged or engaged more, then you'll need a job in which that facility is there. You see, so that's another way of looking at it, which is maybe more positive, you know, more devotional. But of course, Krishna knows what you want. But I do find it's really powerful to pray to Krishna to give you intelligence to figure out how you could find a job or get a job or create a job in which you'll have more time. Rather than just praying, Krishna, please give me the job. You know, then you just sit around and wait for Krishna, you know, wait for somebody to call you up and say, I've got just the job for you. All you have to do is work 2 hours a day and I'll pay you $300 a day. And, oh, perfect. What could be better? But that may never happen. Right? So you pray to Krishna, Krishna, I'm helpless. Please help me understand. Give me the intelligence. Where such a job exists, how could I find it? Please guide me. Could I create a job? Could I, you know, develop my own career on my own so I can work that way? Could I work from home? Is there some way like that? With the skill set I have, what could I do? You know, many people do that. They look at their skill sets, they look at their previous jobs and resumes, and they think, how could I create some occupation for myself where I'd be more free, where I could work from home? So yes, I think it's good because, you know, chanting Hare Krishna means Krishna, please engage me in your service. So to pray to be more engaged, to pray to simplify our life and simplify our means of income, I think it's right in line with that prayer to be engaged. So that's good. So it's good to know that Leela, whose real name is Leelakh, right? Is here, and Leelakh, you were supposed to be in Ireland, right? Did you go? Was it too cold and you came back? Leela can be there. Leela's saying, can there be a situation when we're not attracted neither to material things or to Krishna? Well, that's the worst of both worlds. They say that, you know, there's this stage in Krishna consciousness that we have to go through, or many of us go through. When we realize that material things won't make us happy, we have that experience, and we're not really that attracted. But we haven't developed a taste yet, really a full taste for Krishna consciousness. So we're not tasting Krishna consciousness, and we're not tasting Maya. So we're pretty tasteless, which is a kind of suffering. It's kind of a void in our life. So in that situation, really, we want to push ourselves over the line into the Krishna side, because you really can't go on like that, not tasting anything. And if you're not, you know, our tendency is we'll try to taste the material. It's just our conditioning. It's our programming. So, okay, but it's a good question. I want to add to it something that I think from this discussion it's becoming more clear how important taste is, because it keeps us closer to Krishna and it keeps us further away from Maya. So sometimes what a devotee might do, like in relation to the situation that you're describing, maybe you're not experiencing enough happiness in Krishna consciousness to really motivate you. But then in that situation, it's not wrong to think, what would inspire me in devotional service? How could I be situated in a Krishna consciousness so I'd be inspired doing something that's very much in line with my nature, the way I think, in line with the things I like to do? Could I apply that in Krishna consciousness? Is there something that I could do that would be a valuable service to Krishna, valuable service to the Krishna consciousness movement, at the same time would help spread Krishna consciousness? Another dropout. I'll be right back, folks. Something I could do that would help spread Krishna consciousness. So this is, you know, you might look at this and say, well, that's not pure devotional service. Well, neither is being in nowhere's land, not tasting Krishna, not tasting Maya, because that's a dangerous position. And there are situations in which Prabhupada asked devotees, what do you want? How do you want to serve Krishna? There are situations in which Prabhupada asked his managers to challenge the devotees, to find things that would absorb the devotees. So we need to be absorbed in Krishna's service. And if we're doing something that's very inspiring to us, then we tend to relish that. Then Prabhupada said, if we're relishing that, then there's a tendency to want to serve Krishna because we're just inspired. We want following the principles, to chant more purely, because the inspiration we're getting from our service is inspiring our sadhana. So, Lilak, if you experience that situation, then I would say it's kind of a wake-up call to. It's a wake-up call to look for service that may be really inspiring. Of course, I know you're going to say, but I don't know. I don't know you're going to say that, but I hope you don't say that. Or if you do say that, then I would say start searching, Like some devotees find that they really do better on a farm, taking care of cows, growing food, living simply. That's just, for them, that's like it. That's like the ultimate. If they're in that situation, they're thriving. Other people thrive on the street, contacting the public. For them, that's their oxygen. Other people thrive as teachers, educators. Some people thrive as managers, moving things around, organizing things, having control of situations, creating visions and plans. It's just their lifeblood. Other people like to paint, make music. So the whole idea is connect that with Krishna so that you're getting some taste. It's really important. When you're on a higher level of devotional service, any service you do is going to be inspiring. That's just how it is. But it's just that we'll come to this position and say, Krishna, whatever you want me to do, I'm just an instrument. Direct me. And that relationship with Krishna is so strong, and that desire internally to just be an instrument for Krishna is so strong that one can do that and be blissful and ecstatic doing anything. Still, subconsciously, without thinking, one will naturally gravitate towards executing services which are more in line with one's nature. That you can't avoid because you have a nature. But in your nature, you'll engage according to that nature. But especially in earlier stages of devotional service, finding a service that's relishable for you, that's satisfying, that's inspiring, extremely valuable. And then that would solve this problem. Okay, maybe I'm not so advanced in devotional service that I really have a taste or like a strong taste for chanting or strong taste for hearing. But if I'm attached to my service, if I'm inspired by that, that really it's a strong motivating factor. And I'm happy in Krishna consciousness. There's a nice story I just heard the other day. There was a boy who was coming to the temple in the early days of the movement. And in the early days of the movement, the temple was like a family. There may be 10 or 20 devotees. And the movement was brand new. And so if somebody left, it was like someone just left the family. It was a shock. But anyway, there was this one boy, and he was having a hard time staying. He was one of the devotees. I think he was even initiated. And his problem was he wanted to go to Krishna directly. He had a real hard time with the spiritual master, the concept of the spiritual master, that you can't get to Krishna directly. And so during one class, he just got up and said, I want Krishna directly. I can't go through you. I can't go through somebody else. And so Prabhupada asked him, he said, please come up. And he just put his head on Prabhupada's lap, and he was crying, and Prabhupada was rubbing his head, and Prabhupada was saying, I just want you to be happy. I just want you to be happy. So it was the mission of Srila Prabhupada that he wanted us to be happy. So, you know, we shouldn't feel that it's wrong to be happy. We shouldn't feel guilty about being happy, but we should be happy in Krishna consciousness. And that's what Prabhupada wanted. He didn't want us to be unhappy. He didn't decide to give his life to spreading Krishna consciousness to make people unhappy, to make people frustrated or guilty or repressed or remorseful. He wanted us to be happy, right? So, you know, sometimes we can even see this in this sense that is my service to Prabhupada, my service to my spiritual master to be happy in Krishna consciousness, to be absorbed in some service, to be absorbed in hearing and chanting, to be happy when I'm reading Shastra, to be happy when I'm chanting. That's also service to the Guru. And it's an important service. And it's something that Prabhupada wants. So if we can find a way to serve Krishna according to the instructions of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, find our place within ISKCON, serving in a way that's inspiring, and we're happy, perfect. Do it. Go for it. Don't remain stuck in this position where you're not getting any taste from Krishna consciousness, neither you're getting any taste from Maya. That's a dangerous place. You don't want to be there because you can't stay there. You have to go to one or the other. If you don't go to the Krishna side, you're going to go to the other side because you're going to want some pleasure. You're going to want to find it. I mean, it's practically guaranteed if you're blissful in Krishna consciousness, you won't be looking for anything else because Krishna consciousness is better, right? That's much better. So, nice question, Leela. Thank you for asking. How have you come? The question was also on my mind today. This question, yeah. Okay. I think it's an important point. I'm going to go back to it. Don't feel guilty about being happy. Happy in Maya, yes, we don't. You know, it's not real happiness in Maya, but so-called happiness in Maya, yes, we should feel guilty about that. But happiness in Krishna consciousness, not only should we not feel guilty, but that's something we should want because we need it. Like I said, if you're on a more advanced platform, you won't even look for it. You'll be merged in the ocean of bliss because on higher stages of Krishna consciousness, the senses are more purified. So one is naturally tasting Krishna without desiring to taste, just wants to serve. And one is always tasting bliss. So you won't even have to worry about, is it wrong to be happy or am I materially motivated or whatever. Another common thing that would happen as a problem when Prabhupada would travel, often when he would come to a temple, there would be an arrival address. Arrival address meant everybody would come into a room or the temple. Prabhupada would say something. Usually it didn't last long. He'd say a few words. And often one of the first things he would say, if not the first thing, was, is everybody happy? Of course everybody was happy because Prabhupada was there. And so everybody would say, Jai Srila Prabhupada. But the point is, Prabhupada was happy when his devotees were happy. And he wasn't happy if his devotees weren't happy. Because he knew, if you're in Krishna consciousness, you'll be happy. And if you're not in Krishna consciousness, you won't be happy. So he was happy when the devotees were happy because it indicated they were in Krishna consciousness. So being happy is, you know, we can see it as a goal of our service. Maybe I'm not happy all the time, maybe I'm never happy, maybe I'm miserable for whatever reason, but we can see it as a goal of service to Prabhupada. To be happy, because then if we're happy in Krishna consciousness, he'll be happy because it's an indication that we're advancing. Right? I mean, one time Prabhupada went, you know, so far to say, well, the symptom of Krishna consciousness is happiness. The symptom of not being in Krishna consciousness is unhappiness. Or the symptom of the modes of nature is unhappiness. So there's a lot of truth in that. Of course, there are gray areas in between. But it's a general principle that things such as lamentation are very strong in the modes of nature. Depression, you know, because of loss, because of failure. But in Krishna consciousness, one will not feel that way because one will be more detached. So loss or failure won't be so upsetting, if upsetting at all. So some of you are getting knocked off the... We're doing musical chairs here. Some are getting knocked off the live chat because it only allows 10 now. It used to allow more. Okay, Pallavi has a question. There was a very nice point in one of your lectures, Prabhu, that how even staying up late for one night throws us off our japa routine. And how some devotees even get disrupted for a year without even knowing it. Yeah, so... the idea being that it's like we have this saying amongst some of us, nectar hound. Nectar hound means someone who's looking for nectar, like a hound dog. You know, where is it? You know, so where can I find the nectar? I want the nectar. You know, so you find some devotee and you say, Prabhu, give me the nectar. Tell me something about Krishna. You're chanting Hare Krishna, Maha Mantra. Oh, I want the nectar. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Where's the nectar? I want the nectar. So recite a verse, recite a story. Let's churn the ocean of nectar. That's called the nectar hound. So that's something that we have to be aware of, that actually that's one of our services, in a sense, is to be nectar hounds. And like we're saying here, if you throw your schedule off, it affects your japa, it affects your time for reading, for other activities, where you get nourishment, where you get juice, and you neglect it, it's a problem. Because you're neglecting something tasteful, that's important for you. That's motivating. Yeah, that's a good point. TJ, we are told to chant and be happy. But for me, happiness is rare on this path. The philosophy is that in material life we suffer and in spiritual life we become happy. I've come to a startling realization that all my actions have been fruitive, even though I say, go preaching for my guru or any service has been fruitive, even though I say, service has been fruitive, even if I'm doing it as a service to my guru. Now that material taste pleasure that I was receiving is gone and has left me kind of in the dark night of the soul. In other words, you're saying that you're materially motivated, but you mistook that as some kind of taste in Krishna consciousness, and then you realized you're materially motivated, and now there's no motivation, it's just dry. What motivation is there if I don't have a strong taste for material nor a taste for spiritual? I feel like I'm in limbo. Yeah, so it's a similar question to what Leela was answering. I would answer it the same way. Find something that inspires you and find something that is aligned with your nature, of what you feel is your mission or your gift according to your nature. And really, the taste comes, I mean, ultimately, now we're going to a little higher position now. That, where does taste really come from? Let's do a little analysis. Like, who are those who are really tasting? The ones who are not trying to taste. The ones who are only trying to be instruments in the hands of Krishna and Guru. they're the ones who are tasting, because they're not looking for the taste. And that's how you get the taste, when you're not looking for it. So that's a higher stage, but it's a more realistic stage. That's where taste comes from. When we get to this selfless position, where we don't really care so much about ourselves. Am I happy? Am I not happy? Will this make me happy? Will this make me distressed? Those are the kind of ways of thinking that are preventing us from experiencing more of a taste in Krishna consciousness. If we come to this position where we say, okay, my guru has a mission, Prabhupada has a mission, ISKCON has a mission, let me serve that mission. Let me be an instrument in that mission. Practically immediately you start to experience some deeper level of happiness and satisfaction. Because now you're allowing yourself to be more of an instrument. And that's where the happiness lies, in being an instrument. It really does. And allowing Krishna to use and control you. That's where the happiness lies. So that's where we want to go to. That's what we're looking for. So try that. You know, try just detaching yourself a little bit. Say, okay, I'm going to stop thinking about what's going to make me happy and what's not going to make me happy. I'm going to stop thinking about avoiding pain and looking for pleasure. And I'm just going to, for the next week, allow myself to be an instrument for Krishna. Say, Krishna, what do you want me to do? Just I'll do whatever you want. Of course, you may already know what Krishna wants you to do, and you can start doing it. Or you may already have service, but you do it in more of the mood of an instrument rather than what can I get from it, or I don't like it. In that detached position, that's where we really relish. And the reason we relish is because any relationship that we have where we don't ask for anything, there's love there, there's affection. And we relish it more than when we ask something, when we want to get something from somebody. It's not as relishable as when we just want to serve and give. That's where the highest relish is. So if we do that in relation to Krishna, we get some special taste. And in fact, the problem is we're afraid to do that because we believe, or many of us believe, have a core belief, a central foundational belief, that if we do that, we won't be happy. But actually the opposite is true. And it's funny, if we're not happy, it's really foolish to think that that wouldn't make us happy, because we're not happy being independent, right? But we foolishly think, well, if I just give myself to Krishna, to his will, I won't be happy. And we're not even doing that. We're giving to our will and we're not happy. That's the irony of it. So I would suggest try doing that. You know, just be, next this coming week, just live as an instrument. That I exist for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. I exist for furthering the mission of Krishna consciousness. I exist to help people become Krishna conscious. You know, it's like you could visualize Mother Teresa. So she existed for the welfare of others. She never thought about herself, and that's why she was empowered to do what she did. And was she happy? She probably never even thought whether, she probably didn't even know whether she was happy or not. She was too absorbed in her service and too absorbed in helping people and feeling their pain to even be conscious whether or not she was happy. Of course she was happy, because she wasn't conscious of whether or not she's happy. Right? You understand the principle? You see, the more we become conscious of, I like this, I don't like this, I'm happy, I'm not happy, the less we're going to taste in Krishna consciousness. Because taste comes in higher levels of Krishna consciousness, and higher level means I'm more acting according to Krishna's will. Even I'm doing things I don't want, but on a higher level, it doesn't register anymore that I don't want this. It's all absolute. It's all service. It's all fulfilling Krishna's desire. So therefore, I'm not miserable thinking, oh, I don't like this. This doesn't make me happy. And don't have that discrimination. Now, as I was saying, in lower stages, it may not be possible. But even in the lower stage, we want to bring that consciousness, that attitude, a little bit into it. Even if I have to find something I really like to be happy. But still, we want to bring that higher consciousness. Okay, Krishna, let me be an instrument. So you ask, what motivation is there if I don't have a strong taste for material nor taste for spiritual life? To be an instrument for Krishna's service. That's a higher motivation. To be an instrument, oh Lord, let me be an instrument of your peace. Where there is, how does the prayer go? Where there is suffering, let me sow kindness like that, or sow compassion. Where there is anger, let me sow love, you know? So now I'm just an instrument. Wherever I go, I'm an instrument to bring Krishna consciousness to my family, to others. Or I'm an instrument to help my spiritual master, help Srila Prabhupada in his service. I mean, that's what it means to be a pure devotee, to be an instrument, right? So, let's go on. Ajinkya says, yes, taste increases if higher taste is experienced. Prabhupada uses the word higher taste, meaning a taste that is not material. Spiritual taste cannot compare to material taste. It's like, have you ever had something, either a food or a product, that is so superior to anything you've ever had, that now you can never go back to the other product? You know, like some people get a Mac, and once they get a Mac, they say, I can never go back to a PC. A Mac is so much better. I mean, I never had a Mac. That's what they tell me. My wife was traveling with her friend. Her friend had a Mac. My wife didn't bring her computer. So my wife used her computer, and she came home and said, I have to get a Mac. I can't use a PC anymore. You know? Or if maybe you've been eating a certain kind of food, but someone makes it for you, but they really know how to prepare it in the way it's supposed to be done, and the way you've been eating it is not exactly how it's supposed to be done. And once you taste that, you can't go back to eating it the other way, because now you realize the other way. It's not the way it's supposed to be made. And we all have that experience. So Krishna consciousness, it's the same. Once you get it, you realize, this is what I've been looking for. This is what will touch. This is touches my soul. This is what makes me happy. Other things may pacify me a little bit or satisfy my material needs, but they don't really, at the core, truly make me happy. So that's the value of Krishna consciousness, of tasting it. That the experience is so valuable for our advancement because it fixes us more in devotional service. Krishna, please allow me to taste the nectar of your words, the nectar of your lips. That's totally a devotional prayer. Give me a glimpse of your beauty so that I can go on serving you more and more and more purely. Okay. Palak Paneer says, doing service that is also connected to our nature, is that the key to enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness? At one stage it is. I could say in a sense at any stage it is, but as it's more purified in a higher stage. Whereas I think in the higher stage, you kind of come to this position where you become more of the instrument and just you can practically do anything and you're blissfully doing it. Of course, you may have personal preferences. Maybe you're managing and you'd like to teach more, speak more. But still, it's not that you're not happy doing your other service. But especially in a stage where we're not finding a lot of happiness in Krishna consciousness or a lot of enthusiasm consistently, then finding our nature, employing it in Krishna service, but not employing it in sense gratification. And the difference is that employing it in sense gratification means you use what you like to do as an excuse for doing it, and you try in some way to connect it to Krishna. But the main thing is not connecting it to Krishna. The main thing is doing it. And so you're just rationalizing it by finding some minuscule little connection to Krishna. And so the real thing then becomes your enjoyment. And the justification, rationale for your enjoyment is that you can connect it to Krishna. So we don't want to do that. We want to find what we like doing, what we're good at, what inspires us, and say, how can I employ this in Krishna's service? So that ultimately the whole point is you're doing it for Krishna's pleasure, even though you like to do it, but ultimately you're doing it within the parameters of what's acceptable in Krishna consciousness, within parameters that will help other people become Krishna conscious. And so it's a kind of a detached thinking. You see what I mean? Okay, I like doing this, like you like playing music. So I think, well, how could I play music in a way that would attract people to Krishna? So now that's your goal. But if you get sidetracked and just in the name of playing music for Krishna, you know, you're just playing rock and roll and you throw in a few words, you know, I'm suffering, and then, you know, 20-minute guitar solo. World is bad, another 20-minute guitar solo. So your real business is guitar solo, and you're trying to get away with it by saying, the world is bad. Hey, look it, I'm preaching, the world is bad. So that's not what we want to do. But you want to see how can I use this in a way to uplift other people? How can I use this in a way that's service, that glorifies Krishna and glorifies my guru? You see? Because in bhakti, everything's about motive. It's all, you know, it all boils down to why you're doing it, what's your intention. So the trick is that even though you like doing it, still you want to do it to please Krishna. It's like you might like cooking. You might have grown up cooking when you were young and you just love it. And when you're in the kitchen, you're just like home and that's your bliss. But still, you're not cooking. If you're cooking for Krishna, then you're cooking in consciousness that Krishna will eat it. It's for his pleasure. Even though you're going to eat it later. You see what I mean? It's in, you know, one sense, you could say, well, look it, I like to cook, and I'm cooking this, and I'm going to eat it, so how can I pretend that it's for Krishna? But if you're in the right consciousness, you get in that consciousness that this is for Krishna. I'm his servant, I'm cooking for him. Okay, I like cooking. I like eating broccoli, and I'm cooking broccoli. Still, you're meditating how this will satisfy Krishna, how I'm utilizing what I like to do, but for Krishna's pleasure. That's the whole idea. And in doing that, we have to be careful to have parameters and say, I will work within these parameters. I won't go beyond these parameters. So it looks like you're a musician. You'll say, okay, I'm not going to use my music abilities for certain things that are too far removed from Krishna consciousness. I'll only use it for these things. So then in dealing with those parameters, you're fairly safe in employing your talents in Krishna's service in a way that's pleasing to Krishna and uplifting to you. See, oftentimes we see service as a vehicle for our own upliftment. You know, like we say, Krishna doesn't need the service, but we need the service. So we also see services that way. Okay, you know, maybe my song's not going to save the world, but it saved me. It kept me out of trouble. When I was writing it and playing it and working it out and recording it, I was absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So that's success. If the service keeps us out of trouble, that's also successful. That's also what service is about. It's not just serving, because as I said, it's not like Krishna needs our song or our broccoli or even our temple or our books, publication or distribution. But more is that we need it. That's the understanding. So TJ says, sometimes I think I'm crazy because I have an attraction for this and what to still continue, but what is my motivation? Well, the whole thing is we're conditioned souls, so we're attracted to all kinds of material things for many, many lifetimes. So it's no surprise we're attracted now. Okay, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for a few years, but I'm still attracted. We shouldn't be surprised. But again, it goes back to motivation. Okay, in spite of the fact that I'm attracted to these things, when it comes to devotional service, I need to serve Krishna. Sincerely, honestly, without those other desires interfering. Again, that's pure bhakti. So this is just how it works. You may have two tracks going on in your life for a while, but if you push the Krishna track hard enough and long enough, it'll outshine the other desires. And it's just the stage we're coming from. So we have to deal with it. And you know how Prabhupada would deal with this? He would say, be more strict in your bhakti. So it's your chanting, your hearing, that's going to help you get the taste, it's going to help you overcome the other side. Does that make sense? You know, in other words, one of the things that's important for us to understand is that a lot of times when it's difficult, when we run into these kind of difficulties where we don't find a strong motivation to serve Krishna or we only find material motivations, it can be discouraging. And if it's discouraging, then it's possible we lose enthusiasm or even give up. So we never want to give up. We never want to talk ourselves into a corner where we just become discouraged. It doesn't make any sense. So we still want to figure out how we can be happy and inspired in any situation in Krishna consciousness. Find out a way, whatever it is. It'll be different for all of us. Some way, somehow or other, something you do, something you read, something you see, someone you talk to, there's something, festival you go to, something that keeps you a little, your spirits up. It's really important. I don't know if that answered your question. Have an attraction for this and what to still continue. The thing is, motivation, even if we're, let's say we have material desires and they're very strong and they're dragging us around the universe as they tend to do, we can still isolate pure motivations to serve Krishna. We can find those, or we can at least utilize pure motivations in service to Krishna. So in other words, okay, I want this, I want that, but when I serve Krishna, those aren't going to be my motivations. Oh, I like to have a lot of money. That would be really cool. Then I wouldn't have to work. But that's not going to be my motivation to serve Krishna. That Krishna will give me a lot of money. I have that desire. Okay. My motivation is to please Guru and Krishna. So the motivation can be distinct from these desires that are very strong within us. They're there, we recognize them, but we don't allow them to motivate us. And we have control over our motivations and intentions. Okay, maybe you realize you're proud. Don't allow your pride to be a motivating factor in your service. I'm going to do this to get somebody's attention. Don't allow that to be the motivation. The desire may be to get someone's attention. You know, you'd really like to get another devotee's attention, or like maybe like to get the whole temple's attention. But you realize that is the wrong motivation to do my service, with which to do my service. So you don't do your service with that motivation. You still may have the desire to get people's attention, but at least you didn't perform your service with that desire. So you're good. You're in a good position. That's pure devotional service. Even though you're not pure, you just did pure devotional service. Isn't that nice? That we can do pure devotional service even though we're not pure. That's wonderful, isn't it? Fantastic. Otherwise, what's the option? We're all impure. We're just going to be depressed because we're impure. But we can still do pure devotional service. We can still offer some affection and devotion. One time Prabhupada said, they were talking about love, and he said, well, you can't say you love the guru and you don't follow his instructions. So now we might feel that we don't really have love for our guru or love for Prabhupada. But Prabhupada's saying, you follow my instructions, that's love. Okay, but I have so much lust. But somehow or other, I don't act on it, and I follow Prabhupada's instructions, and Prabhupada accepts, that's my love. That's nice, isn't it? That even though I'm a lusty person, I can still have love. So that's how we think. Okay. Okay, let's go. What are the symptoms that we're getting taste? Detachment, disinterest. Or just, if it's not detachment, it's neutrality. You don't care one way. Sometimes detachment can be aversion, and that's the opposite side of attraction. And generally, detachment comes more in a neutral attitude for things. They don't bother you, and you're not attracted to them. Becoming less and less interested in material things, or less and less important for you. You may have to engage. Like you're going to school, you may have to engage in these things. But as you become more Krishna conscious, they're not as important to you as they were before. So it's just as we give the example, if you get a taste for something better, you give up something worse. So in answer to your question, you kind of see it in your life. If you're noticing things that you're no longer interested in, that perhaps you were very interested in before you came to Krishna consciousness. That means you're getting a taste for Krishna consciousness, because if you didn't get that taste, how could you give up those other things? You couldn't. Wouldn't be possible, right? So, and you can see within your own mind and heart and senses, are your senses too much attracted by material things? That could be an indication of a lack of taste. Dissatisfaction could be an indication of lack of taste. Even things like fault finding and envy can be an indication of lack of taste, because generally we find that when we're happy, we're more happy, we're more satisfied. We don't fault find, do we? You know, fault finding is, you know, someone who's really into fault finding is generally not a happy guy or girl. They're kind of a miserable. You don't really picture like really happy people going around finding fault with everybody, do you? They don't, you know, they seem to like everybody. So that could be another symptom. And as I said before, symptom of getting taste is that everything about Krishna is attractive to you. You just relish reading, you relish chanting, you relish puja, you relish service. It's not boring, you could do it every day. I just saw a documentary on a convent in America where young girls were becoming nuns. And they say, people, look at that life, it's so restrictive. And they themselves said, they had the fear that, that life would be restricted. But then when they joined, they said every day is exciting and more profound and deeper than the next because they're making spiritual advancements and they're going deeper. So they're getting more realization, they're getting more taste, more appreciation, more understanding. So now everything is, it seems, it's the same, but it seems different. So that's another aspect of taste, that as we're advancing, things become different, or they look different, and they look new, even though they're the same. So that same mantra you use, like, wow, it's different today, sweeter. Somehow it's, I'm relishing it in a new way. It's just, you know, where I'm hearing Bhagavatam, but today it's even more special, like that. So, Abhikam says, a lot of times I seem to worry, like the statement above, that I'm not getting a taste. So, okay, so what do? Sometimes we get our taste by not wanting the taste, not trying for it, but just being in the mood of Krishna. Okay, if you don't want to give me the taste, that's fine, but I'm happy to serve you. So now all of a sudden, you're happy to serve Krishna. Whoops, the taste just came. I first got my taste for kirtan when I stopped trying to get the taste, and I just chanted to please Krishna. So if you're worried about getting taste, maybe you need to stop worrying about getting a taste, and maybe then you'll get the taste. Sometimes it works that way. Just worry about pleasing Krishna and see how that works for you. Okay. I've been really sad last couple of days over an issue. Any advice? Well, this is interesting because if we focus too much on our own pain and misery, it's very difficult to experience the pleasure of Krishna consciousness because everything in Krishna consciousness will now be clouded through our vision, right? The vision of our own pain. I mean, that's one thought. There can be other thoughts. Another thought, and this is kind of, this will sound unsympathetic, and I don't mean it to be, but maybe you'll relate to this, maybe you won't. If you don't relate to this, it's fine. Just don't shoot me for saying it. Sometimes in situations like this, Prabhupada was not sympathetic. He would find a devotee, or a devotee would come to him who was depressed or upset, and he would say something to the effect of, haven't you understood our philosophy? Because they might be lamenting for loss of a person or something, or they might be hankering for something they don't have. And so all of this is clearly explained in our philosophy. This is temporary. Happiness is beyond hankering and beyond duality. So sometimes he would be heavy and kind of shake us out of our stuff, out of our depression. And sometimes it's necessary because we are allowing ourselves to become attached to something perhaps that we can't have or perhaps that we lost, and it's causing us a lot of pain. Sometimes we need to be shaken up a little bit to get perspective. Okay, get yourself together. So sometimes Prabhupada would do that. Sometimes we just need knowledge. We need to hear more, particularly in relation to the problem we're having. And sometimes we might need to do something that's very pleasing. Like, let's say you like kirtan, just get very involved in kirtan now. You like to read, read a lot. And also another thing is that material depression and sadness is symptomatic of ignorance, and we don't want to be in ignorance. So internally, we should not allow ourselves to be overcome by ignorance. And then unhappiness, because it's in ignorance, then you want to do things that invoke goodness. Rising early, bathing, studying, chanting. In other words, if you do enough activities which are transcendental or close to it, it elevates your consciousness above the lower modes, and the lower modes are what are causing your unhappiness. I'm not saying that you won't always be unhappy, but as long as you can keep yourself above the modes, you'll be in a better position, and generally you'll be happy. Something to think about. Hare Krishna. Okay. I don't know if that helped, Carol. Of course, dwelling on the issue incessantly, repeatedly, could make it much worse. A question for you, Carol. You're seeing what happened to you last night. Is there another way to see it? Could it mean something other than what you're thinking it means? Try to see it in another way. That can help you. So, Hrishikesh Dash, Prabhu asking Krishna to allow me to taste his name. Is it contradictory to be an instrument? Are we seeking happiness? Haridas Thakur asked Krishna, asked Mahaprabhu for a taste. So, it can't be impure. It can only be impure if we're impure. Now, look at it this way. Devotional service begins ado shraddha, with faith. And then from faith, we associate. And by associating with devotees who are doing bhajan, sadhana bhakti, we want to do it also. And as we're associating and doing our bhakti, then we want to take initiation, we get serious. And then as we get serious, we're practicing anartha nivritti, purifying our heart. And we come to the stage where most our heart has become cleansed, or predominantly cleansed. And then after that, our devotional service starts to become steady, because the things that were making it unsteady, the unwanted desires, the obstacles are for the most part removed. And then after that, we come to a stage called nista. And nista means firm faith, as different from the first stage of faith, which is not so firm, pliable. And then the faith becomes very firm, or we become very steady at devotional service. And the stage after that is ruchi, or taste. So, in answer to your question, could it be material? Could it be contradictory to ask for a taste and be pure? Well, if you see taste as an elevated stage of bhakti, then you would never have any regret about asking Krishna to elevate you to a higher stage of bhakti, would you? Beyond taste, there's rati, which is attraction, and then there comes bhava. You wouldn't feel wrong asking Krishna to help you come to the stage of rati, would you? I don't think so. Or asking to come to the stage of bhava, nobody would have a problem. Krishna, please help me. Bring me to the stage of love. Help me love you. So in the same way, we're praying, help me come to the stage of ruchi, or taste. So in that sense, we see it as a stepping stone, a stage on the way to pure love. And it's a necessary stage. So when the devotee is praying that way, you could rephrase it and say, Krishna, please help me come closer to you. Because each stage is getting closer and closer to Krishna. At least that's how we should see it. Sometimes you have prayers, devotees praying, I'm miserable, Nityananda, you're always blissful, make me happy. So that sounds pretty mundane, make me happy, right? But it's make me happy in Krishna consciousness, make me happy in your service. Make me happy to be with you, to chant your name. That we want. We can pray like that. Otherwise, we're going to want to be happy doing something else, right? I think so. Not, I don't think so, I know so. Unless we're rare, you know, extremely, extremely disciplined. And how long can we do that without taste? Rura Krishna Param Padam Tata. They go up to Brahman and they fall down. There's nothing to do. They get bored. It's no pleasure. DJ says, does one need to be on that higher platform of bliss in order to be with Krishna, especially after leaving the body? Well, of course, whatever platform you're on at the time of death, Krishna can elevate you to any other platform. So we don't want to count out that possibility, but generally, higher platform of bliss. Well, look at it, let's reword it. If you're with Krishna, you'll be in bliss. So if you're on a higher platform of Krishna consciousness, that means you're closer to Krishna, and then you'll be blissful as a byproduct. And if you're not on that, then you can say, if you're not on that higher platform, how will you be Krishna conscious? At the time of death or any other time before death? But, you know, Prabhupada would say, you can be on that higher platform of bliss immediately, chanting, dancing, feasting. You know, in much of the way he wrote and spoke, you get this idea that you can immediately go there. Maybe you won't permanently stay there, but you can go there for a while. You could go there for a long while if you stay absorbed in hearing and chanting. And we see that. It's practical. Pallavi says, what did Prabhupada say about astrology and how the stars affect us? Prabhupada said, clap three times and clap three times in front of the deities and all the lines on your hands will go away that dictate your karma. One time, he didn't take it so seriously. He used it sometimes, but he didn't take it so seriously that he allowed these predictions to govern decisions that needed to be made, that he felt must be made, that perhaps he wouldn't have made if he would have taken his astrology into consideration. It can be useful. The example Prabhupada said, well, if you know it's going to rain, then you can take an umbrella with you. So astrology can be useful in the sense of knowing. Some difficulties may be there, or some opportunities may be there. But you have to understand also something about Prabhupada is that he had an organization and he was trying to establish certain fundamentals. And he didn't want to distract the devotees into other things that were not that important. So if Prabhupada was really into astrology, then everyone in ISKCON practically would be into astrology. So even if he were into it, and he saw that if everyone were into it, it wouldn't be good, he would just say, I'm not into it, don't do it. I heard a story yesterday. Prabhupada had a servant, and the servant was doing hatha yoga. He was standing on his head, and after he did it, or while he was doing it, Prabhupada said, you know, this is good. You should do this every day. And the devotee said, oh, I didn't think that hatha yoga was good for us or that you would encourage it. And Prabhupada said, just try to understand, I'm encouraging you and not everybody else. If I make a general statement that hatha yoga is good, then everybody's going to be, it'll create a whole fad in ISKCON, and you know, people will be doing it and maybe getting in the way of service. So he said, I'm telling you for your sake that it's good. You do it. So, you know, in some cases, Prabhupada had to be careful about what he said. Because it could create a whole other movement in a movement. So, as to his true feelings about astrology, sometimes he had it done. Sometimes he would say, let's do it to have a laugh. But that And the fact that he did it meant that he was considering something. And certain inauspicious time of the week or month, which was considered inauspicious to do anything, he wouldn't do anything. He wouldn't enact any programs during that time. So he did follow some. Didn't believe that much, but something's there. Okay. So Bhakti Kirill says, I have been taught those things and still I'm so sad. Well, I don't want to be cliche, but the solution is Krishna consciousness. The problem is the sadness gets away, can get in our way from being able to execute Krishna consciousness. I would say when there's sadness, it's important to associate with devotees who are inspired, who are enlivened, who are happy, who can pep us up. That's what Sangha's for. So, you know, Carol, it sounds like it's really difficult for you. And so when something's really difficult, often the only thing that really works is the association of someone who is very positive, uplifting, encouraging, understanding. Sometimes we take, we may have to take the difficulty, the sadness as some kind of gift from Krishna, some kind of lesson, something. Something to think about. Can these demigods, the stars, astrology govern some of our destiny? Yes. Because Prabhupada would say, you know, everyone has their karma. So some people will never get rich. It's not their karma. Some people will never get poor. It's not their karma. So the planets do influence actions on the earth. It's something, Carol says, something I can't have and is lost. But it is my son I was supposed to teach him. He was taken by non-devotees. Wow. Yeah, that's very difficult to deal with. And then I would say that you have to grieve. It's not like now's not the time for not grieving. Grieving's part of the process, and through the grieving come to a level of acceptance that it will take time. I mean, you know, you may never get over it. That's also there. But if anything's going to help you, it's Krishna consciousness. You know. And Krishna consciousness, maybe it's not helping you now so much because you're more overcome by this and it's just more difficult. But as the fog clears, gradually you're going to find that that's your real shelter is there and Krishna's still there. And you know, you don't know the karmic background of your son and why he's been taken and so forth. So we have to try to see a broader picture perspective. And it's not, it doesn't have to be automatic that if somebody is not with us, we have to be unhappy. I mean, that's what our society tells us. We have to be unhappy. We would almost feel weird if we weren't unhappy, but in spiritual circles, it's different. It's not that people feel obligated to be unhappy because someone has left. Sometimes they celebrate a life well lived. Let us celebrate the person who's left. You see? So there. See if you can find a different perspective. I mean, it must be extremely difficult. I don't know what else to say right now. You know, it's like Prabhupada, you know, he taught us, and so he expected us to deal with our problems based on what he taught us. So, you know, we have the shelter there of his instruction, and his instruction will give you shelter. It'll give you real solace. So I suggest you just allow yourself to bathe in Prabhupada's instructions. And it will help you tremendously. And that's why he wrote them. He didn't just write them for us when things were good. He wrote them so we could deal with these problems, right? Okay, I hope that helps. I mean, it's going to be difficult for you, no doubt. But your real shelter is there in Prabhupada and Krishna. And the more you take that shelter, the easier it'll be to work through this. Prabhupada, Ajinkya Sense Prabhupada said, I can kick 10 rahas with my one leg. I don't know, maybe he said that, but he said, I could kick, with one stroke, I can kick out all Maya. And so what he meant was, by his instructions, he can rid us all of our Maya. So that's where we want to go when we're in difficulty. So Pallavi says, I spent a few days with an astrologer friend. Yeah. So, I mean, they give some indication according to our karma. But we're creating new karma, so it's not, you know, it's indicative, but not absolute. Krishna consciousness transcends karma. One time Prabhupada said, you know, whatever our karma is, we accept it. We just go on with service. Yeah, TJ saying, will you talk about this topic in future classes? Yeah, because I only got about a quarter of the way through what I wanted to talk about. There's a lot. It'll take a little time to figure this one out. Sometimes, you know, you can define love as taste, synonymous. That's also there. Some acharyas define love as thirst for Krishna. So taste, thirst, it's very similar. We will talk about it next week. Next week is kind of tight. I'm coming back from Guyana next week on Tuesday, and I don't think I arrive till like 7:30. We'll keep you posted. We may have to start later. Yeah, Tetsit Paneer, Pollock Paneer says yes. Do you get hungry when you read Pollock Paneer's name? Pollock Paneer is a preparation full of curd. Makes me hungry when I look at your name. Of course, I gave him that name. It's his nickname now. Taste and determination, yeah. So now it's so late. But the other side is, when there's no taste, then you're just left with determination. So, you know, Prabhupada said that also. You know, because in the beginning, there's not a lot of taste. So what keeps you going? It's your determination. But then Prabhupada said, by going with your determination, you get the taste. And then the taste will keep you going. So when the taste isn't there, then that's how we keep going, right? But we can't go on forever like that. It's, you know, most people don't have that kind of determination, right? Because the motive, the pushing to taste something is going to be there. So even though you're trying to go on just by your own determination, it may not always be possible unless there's some taste. So I would say, not I would say, I do say, that somehow or other, get a taste for Krishna. However you can do it, get it. Because it's really what's going to keep you going. If you like Krishna, if you like devotional service, then you'll always be serving Krishna. And therefore, you'll always be becoming purified and you'll always be making advancements. So keep going. Keep doing it. Keep getting a taste. Okay. Bhaktan Carol sounds very painful, yes. You know, what can you do? Like, I think that anytime we're deeply distraught, one of the first places we need to go is Prabhupada's books for our shelter, because we'll find so much shelter in his books. And we'll get so much clarity and vision, because he's coming from a different perspective. And that perspective is uplifting. And I think it's very important, not just for Bhakti and Carol, but for all of us, when we face difficulty, to take shelter in Prabhupada's books. So many answers will come to us that we need, for sure. I think everything's there. Prabhupada said, everything is in my books. I think one way you could understand that is every solution to every problem is there. Every problem we could have, the solution is there in Prabhupada's books. So, Emotion, thank you. I hope to see and listen to you next week. Yes, thank you. Palak. Then I'll have to go back to your name, Palak. Palak. Palak Paneer. It's okay. Everyone can go eat now that they're hungry reading your name. Okay, it's really late. I have to leave tomorrow morning at 5:30. I'm not even packed to go to Guyana. We're doing a workshop on forgiveness. We want to help the devotees there. And I'm also going to be focusing on overcoming our propensity for fault-finding and showing how important it is to deal with this. And a lot of us, we don't want to deal with it. It's difficult to deal with. Or maybe we think we can't deal with it, but we need to deal with it. And we all have strong tendencies to feel that we're superior to others, and then as a result we criticize, and it's detrimental to our devotional service. We want to get the mercy of the devotees, and we get the mercy by glorifying and serving and appreciating. And we don't get the mercy by criticizing, and Krishna doesn't like it, which is a really good reason not to do it, isn't it? Okay, so we'll keep you posted about next week. Thank you for coming, everyone, and Hare Krishna to all of you.